In this Rewind episode, we are joined by Ben Tasley, who shares his story from a devastating motorcycle accident to finding acceptance and redefining strength. Ben's courage to share his story gave Sean the permission to break down his own silence about infertility. This episode proves that inspiration can come from the most unexpected places. Enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Male Fertility Podcast. And it's a bit of a different episode this week. It's one that I've been trying to engineer for a while, and I'm so delighted tonight to be joined by Ben Tasley. Ben, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's, mate, our absolute pleasure. And I'm going to, as I said, it's a bit of a different topic, subject matter. And so I'm going to take a different approach rather than just going straight in and speaking to you, Ben. Just give me a minute because I need to share exactly why we've asked you to be here today. So I'm not going to give anything away of your story just yet, but your story means a lot to me, even though it's nothing to do with fertility. So let me take you back to, so two major things happened. So I got diagnosed as infertile. I had no sperm when me and my missus were trying to conceive. So obviously it knocked my ego, my identity as a man, didn't know where I was, a bit lost. And two things happened. So in September 19, I came across Henry Fraser. I don't know if you heard of Henry?
Henry Fraser. That rings a bell, actually. Yeah, but if you explain his story a bit, I might know.
So he was a young lad on holiday with his mates in Portugal, and he got paralyzed from his neck down. He now does the mouth paintings.
Okay, yeah, I do. Actually, yeah, I see him. Yeah, I've seen him on telly, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So I heard about him. I bought his book, and that this was like after I'd had the second operation to try and find some sperm and stuff like that. And it, they're both negative, and I was at the bottom. Now, his story did one thing, and that was start setting me on the path to acceptance. And that was September 19. It wasn't for me a quick process. I worked through this. May 2020, we're in lockdown. And in that time in between, I'd been digesting a lot of kind of like self-development books, personal improvement, stuff like that. Because there was no other men talking about infertility. Yeah. And I felt really alone. But I was getting a lot from these stories. And then one day, it was lockdown, our clinic had asked us if we'd be willing to be interviewed by the BBC about the impact of lockdown on fertility treatment, because our treatment got shelved when we were about to start it. And we said, yeah, cool. And they were due to come around about lunchtime. And I was doing some painting in the morning, listening to a podcast called Take Flight, which was like one that I worked through, like literally from episode one right through. And yeah, I think it was around about episode 47 or something like that from memory. And I hear you. And I have to say, right, at this point, May 2020, so 3.5 years into this by now for us, I hadn't told a soul.
Yeah.
Not any of my best mates or anything.
Right, okay. Yeah.
I was struggling, like really struggling. And then, as I said, Henry's story started setting me onto a path, a bit of acceptance about who I was. And then I heard your story and I turned to my missus and I said, when these guys come over from the BBC, they were going to film us, but obviously we're doing it outside because it was still. I said, I'm going to tell them everything, my whole story. And she was like, thought I was mad because I hadn't told anyone. Yes. I barely had been speaking to her.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to do it. And I did. And it was like a pressure valve being released. These poor guys. So the agenda was the effect on lockdown and fertility treatment. I'm in there literally going, blah, 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 spilling 3.5 years of pain, grief, trauma. Because I had this spark. And this is what you did. So I think Henry's story took me to like the kind of pinnacle, the precipice like of acceptance. But your story then pushed me well over the other side into that, like, firmly into acceptance, but also gave me this drive to do something with it, just like literally there and then. And bless these guys, they were stood there, what the hell, this isn't what we came for. And as it happens, none of that got into the cut. It was like a tiny little news section, and it wasn't about that because that's not the agenda. No. So they cut all that out, but it was what I needed at that time. I then spent that night phoning all of my mates, telling them all, and the way in which they received it was just like top draw. These are guys that hadn't had any issues with fertility, and I thought that they would never understand, but they were just good lads. Like, the reason they were my best mates. And then I decided, so that was May 2020, so it's like lots of, and I was like, I need to do this further, but it still took me 8 more months to put myself properly out there. I started an Instagram account and I was like, I'm going to share my story. But it took me 8 months because I was petrified of being trolled, like getting a stick for being a bloke with no sperm. What does that make me? Blah, blah, blah. Like, And I eventually wrote the first 2 posts. I had them ready. They were like locked on a private Insta. And then I posted them and I put my phone into flight mode and went out for a walk and listened to your episode again. And just to convince me I'd done the right thing, so I still petrol. And it again, yeah, yeah. It just reignited that drive. I was like, yeah, absolutely, you've done the right thing here. And yeah, I came home, took my phone off flight mode, and it was just mental. Like, all the reception of people saying, like, finally, there's a bloke talking about this. And yeah, then I messaged you and told you, like, spilt that. You must have been like, what the fuck's going on? This has nothing to do with it. But the whole point is, and this is why I wanted to get you on, is because it doesn't matter what people are going through. Your story was so powerful about, it's all about like growth, acceptance, mindset, and turning adversity into power. And that doesn't mean, in my case, for example, starting an Instagram with a silly name and sharing openly, publicly. If any guys are listening to this, and you are, and you will be just as inspired by Ben's story, what is right for you? And that could just be opening up to your best mates or someone else in your family. And that could be literally what is right for you. So, as I said, I'm going to try and keep this short. This is going into 6 minutes now, but I just wanted to get that across because it was, I don't think it's over-exaggerating if I was to say it was life-changing for me. So no pressure.
It's amazing to hear that, just because you remember the message and I read it and we chatted about it, but you never really know the true impact. So you hear a little bit, but so to hear you talk about it with such passion and stuff is rewarding for me. Like I always say, like no matter what you're going through, when you talk about it and people buy into it or stems off, you just never know who you're going to help. And it's a catalyst for loads of things. Yeah, so nice. And it gives purpose to like my injury to know that you've now created this. There's, like I said, there's meaning in everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just literally remember something actually as we were chatting. I remember when we were starting to plan our podcast, Kieran and I, it took us 10 months to get going because we have no background in this. He said, write a list of three people you want to get on, and you were one of mine.
Right. Okay.
And, it wasn't that you were hard to get on. It was we were waiting for the right time where the first few series had very specific kind of themes. But
yeah.
So yeah, I'm delighted, absolutely delighted that you're finally here. So, and without further ado, people are probably like, God, get on with it. Let's hear a story then. So let's take people back to 2017 and what happened to you or for you, I should say, then.
Ben. Yeah. So in sort of 2017, I was, like I always say, like probably a superhero in my kids' eyes. I was a young dad, had two young children, successful business. Life was pretty good. Been quite athletic my whole life, boxed, and just always one of them lads with self-belief, brought up, bit of a man's man by my dad, two brothers. And I was just confident. I had everything going for me, really. And one day we went out on a family day out, me and my partner at the time. And both kids, I had my son on the back of a motorbike. We'd been for a day. We'd been down the coast, had some food. And just on the way home, another motorcycle, the lad I actually knew, was a member of the gym. He'd actually came, I brought him dinner that day. So I came around the car too fast, didn't really see us in front of it. Hit us from behind and knocked us off. And I broke my back. I can remember laying on the actual road. The lady was there and the first lady on the scene type thing. She wasn't a paramedic, but she was first aid trained type thing. And I asked her to take my helmet off at first and she said, no, not taking it off. I think I asked a few times, got quite aggressive. She didn't take off, which I'm grateful for. And then I asked her to uncross my legs. I said, look, can you uncross my legs? And she said, they're not crossed. And I knew from that moment, I said, I've broken my back. And she said, I can't answer that. But yeah, from there, I got airlifted to Adam Brooks Hospital. And basically, I didn't find out for 2-3 weeks what actually happened. I was in and out of consciousness, but I broke my back around T4 level. So it was around about nipple height. And they told me that I would never walk again. Sat my family down and just said, look, unfortunately, your son is never going to be able to stand. And that was me. Paralyzed, I've gone from someone who could run to Africa if you want me to, I've stuck to a bed and couldn't actually move. I was broken. Yeah, I mean, it was obviously quite a journey, but yeah, it was a crazy wake up, really.
Yeah, man. And thanks for sharing that, because it must be quite traumatic to, you've probably told it a few times now, to keep saying it or maybe keep reliving it. I can imagine it's tough, even though you are doing great work with it. I really appreciate you sharing it with the listeners. When you like came to and was with it, like you said, you were in and out of consciousness a bit for those first few weeks. What was your first emotional response? Can you remember it?
I can remember going in and out of consciousness. So I'd wake up and there'd be someone standing there and I'd just be like a bit drowsy. Then I'd fall asleep and then someone else would be there. So the first definitely couple of weeks were like just in and out. Like I can't remember any real moments of consciousness really. I was broken. I had a 10-hour operation. They put metal rods all down my back and I remember being in so much pain. The main thing was because it literally affects everything from below that level of injury. So I couldn't wee, I couldn't poo, and I was so constipated. Like I just couldn't, they couldn't get it out. So they were like filling me, relaxing. I think it was like 9 days I didn't go to the toilet for. And it was so painful, so painful. And I got through all that. But my first sort of moment, which I remember being awake, was obviously my first question was Jude okay, my son? And he was fine. He had a couple of nights in the hospital, like bumps and bruises. But as soon as I knew he was fine, I was just like, accepted it. Generally, haven't had a down day about the whole thing. Like I haven't even bothered me just because it was, he was fine. My next sort of thought was the lad who hit me. He was in a similar friendship group to us and knew a lot of my friends. So I obviously knew him. And his dad actually committed suicide when he was quite young. So my instant thought was, like, is he okay? There's a lot to deal with. You've lost your dad and now paralyzed one of your friends type thing. So I called him and just said, look, are you okay? And he was like, yeah, I'm okay. How are you? And I said, I think I'm paralyzed. I don't think I'm coming back from this. And at that point, I didn't know. And I just said, look, he didn't do it on purpose. I know he didn't set out that day to paralyze me. It was just a freak accident. So look, don't be down. Is what it is type thing. So I just had this super ability to accept it. And yeah, I still don't know why. I think everything builds. I live my life, everything happens to a reason. And I'm very good at piecing life together. When things happen and I can't work out why, it always sticks in my head. And then something will happen. I'll be like, oh, okay, I know where that happened so many years ago. Even to this point, this podcast, like that is stemmed from that. And it just pieces the puzzles together. And you could probably tell me how many people you've helped. And you just think, one, if one didn't happen, the other wouldn't happen. I look at life as a giant interlinked spider's web. Like every little thing interacts with everyone. And it's amazing how it works out.
Yeah. It's a really important thing you said there was trying to find the meaning in something. Because then you said the word years down, like the line type thing. And because sometimes that answer, I think, doesn't present itself at the time. But it could take a long time. And sometimes it might feel that things are just absolutely unfair and I'm going through things or have been through things that I'm still trying to find the meaning of, but
yeah,
trust that it probably is there somewhere and that I'll find it. And like you said, that those pieces will interlink and fall into place at some point. But sometimes, and I think this is, again, so key for the part of the conversation, is that sometimes you can't make sense of it in the moment.
And I think sometimes things will happen to me or you or have in generally always about us. Me having an accident might not have been about me. It might have been actually about you starting your process. And I always like to think like there could be someone you've helped along the line that does end up going and adopting a child and that child grows up and ends up being the president of a country and stops the world. But always said, trust the process. And like you said, that moment of acceptance you had, like you bottled it up for so many years and struggled with it. I think you can never deal with a problem or move on from it until you actually fully accept it. Sometimes you think you've accepted it and you might have done it, but when you fully accept it, that is when you actually take that leap forward. I think in any time before that, you're actually stuck. If I hadn't have accepted my injury, I'm still stuck thinking about what I used to be or where I was and who I was. I'm not moving on. I'm not living. And that is the power of acceptance.
Yeah, it's an incredible mindset to have. I think 99.9% of the world would take such a knock from that. And it would take time. Well, how you've spoken in terms of just gratitude for the fact that your son was all right, the guy who hit you was all right, so everything's all right. Especially that early, you know, like in the whole thing that's happened, journey, experience, whatever you want to call it. It's an incredible mindset to have. Do you think there's anything in your life that occurred to make you like that?
Yeah, I think everything. Like I generally always say, the accident was always going to happen. That was just always going to be part of my story. Yeah. So everything leading up to that was to set me up to be this point. Like, it's almost, I have these massive conversations with ChatGPT at the minute, like about free will. Does free will exist and where does it come from? And I've had a few things happen recently from that. I never was religious or anything like that, but just a few things happened, which I was like, religion, God, whatever. So I've been really deep diving into this thing. And I just think everything in my life was setting me up to deal with it in that way. There was a couple of key things that always stood out to me, because I've always said, like, everything happens for a reason. Something good always comes from something bad. And I've always understood that life is short. I've always said, life don't really begin until you're 20. Everything before that is you're at school, you're controlled by your parents' rules, regulations. So you turn 20, you do what you like. And then I always used to tell myself, actually, you get to 60, then you're on a bit of a wind down anyway. So I always used to tell myself, I've got 40 years to do what I want. And I can just remember being a young kid at, I think it was a funeral of one of my mum's friends, probably one of the first funerals I went to. And I've always been quite observant. I like to observe people life and I just watch how people are. And I think she had two brothers, or someone there had two brothers, and they hadn't spoken for a very long time. And I see them at the bar having a beer together, like just chatting away. And I can remember sitting there thinking, there's all this misery on this bad day, but yet there's some good to come from this lady passing away. Like, that's a good thing. And I could start to cherry pick good things from every bad situation. And that mindset of believing that something good comes from it forces you to look for the positive. So if I didn't have that mindset, you know what, something bad can really happen and I can pull a positive from it, even if that doesn't really link like that. If it does in my head, it just makes me look for the good rather than the bad. And I think even boxing, spent my youth playing football. Boxing was a bit of a family sport. But I started boxing seriously when I was like probably 13 until I was like 19. And I think had I continued to play football, I probably wouldn't have dealt with the injury in the same way, because like you can have a game of football, play bad yourself, but still win. Whereas boxing is such an individual sport, you get out of boxing what you put into boxing. If you don't train hard, as a horrible place to be when you're out of breath and someone's trying to punch you in the face, you have to work hard and it's all on you at the end of the day. So that was the same with walking. Nobody was actually ever going to make me walk other than me. I had to put that effort in. And I think it's why I enjoyed it. It was almost like, I've always been the same. If someone says you can't do something, I'm like, watch me. I like to prove people wrong. I like to just show that I can actually do stuff. So for me, that was like the biggest challenge I was ever going to have. You are never going to walk. I was like, okay. And don't get me wrong, had I not had any hope to do that, up until the point I could wiggle my toe, I'd accepted, all right, I'm not bothered. I'm never going to walk, never going to stand. I'll be the best version of me in a wheelchair. That was my outlook. I was ringing the athletics commission to try and book myself into athletics competitions whilst I was still strapped to the bed. Like, they contacted me and was, oh, how long have you actually been paralyzed? And I said, 3 weeks. And she's like, oh, you've been out of hospital 3 weeks. I said, no, I'm still strapped to the hospital bed. And she was like, I've never had anyone apply for a disabled athletics meeting whilst they're still strapped to the bed. And I was like, look, this, I've just got to get cracking. But then from the moment I could wiggle my toe, I had hope that there was a chance I could do something. So I was like, that was like a red rag to a bull. I was like, watch me. And I've been extremely lucky. Don't get me wrong, I've worked very hard. But yeah, to answer the question, I just think life set me up to do that. It's just, I believe it's that smallest detail, everything happens to a reason. It's just a bigger part of the global story.
That is incredible. What an answer. Thank you, Ben. Wow. Yeah, it's like, that's brilliant about, like, how long? 3 weeks. 3 weeks since my accident. That's wow. I bet she tells people about that all the time. I bet that's...
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But yeah,
that's
again,
a dinner table topic for her.
Exactly. And that inspires probably others. It's just, it's crazy how the world works. Just the other week, even like I was driving home in traffic and I stopped to let a man cross the road and I watched him walk down the road, down the high street. And I thought, I wonder how many people he interacts with on his walk home now. Like, had I not stopped and he had to wait there for another 5 minutes, he would have been interacted with a completely different set of people. Everyone's lives interacts with everyone's and it just pushes you down a different path. Like, even by the minute. And it amazes me when I look at that.
Like sliding doors moments.
Yeah, type thing. And I think that mindset of just trusting that as part of a bigger picture has been my superpower.
Yeah, I often think that if I'm like delayed on a journey or something, I always think I don't know what might have happened at the other end if I was on time, or like I could have, anything could have happened. That goes through my mind is, oh, you don't know what this is for. So just can't do it. And it comes down to that control aspect, which I'm going to come on to, funnily enough. But
yeah,
I want to, you said something about boxing, like you get back what you put in. But I think that's so true of life, isn't it? Like the energy you put in and where to, then is what you get back. And you putting that into positivity, mindset, control.
Everything's about perspective, isn't it? If you're negative with yourself, your thoughts and down dumps, then you only look and feel for the negative things. But if you can actually just try be positive, then, you know, your perspective on life is a little bit different. But I think any is, you can clearly see effort outperforms talent any day of the week. Talent's great, but if you don't put the effort in with it, someone over a long period of time who is consistent with effort always does better. I'm still very strong in the gym and I can go in, I can lift big weights, but I'm never really lean unless I'm consistent. And those kids who just put in the work every day, a little bit, and then over a long period of time, they're always going to do better.
Yeah, it's so true. There's so much that can be applied to any aspect of life, no matter what you're going through. Yeah, thank you. And I want to touch upon, as you've alluded to so far, so you're in hospital and you've got the doctor saying you ain't going to walk again. They've sat your family down to tell them, and you've given us a little spoiler. So what did that fire up inside of you, and what have you done with that? What did that journey look like for you?
Yeah, over the course of 3-4 weeks maybe, because they have to have certain people what deliver that news to you. I think they're not allowed to just have any random nurse come in and tell you that you're never going to walk again, because you can imagine some people take it really bad. But I cherry-picked enough information from doctors, nurses to come to that conclusion. That is what was going to happen. But the lady that actually operated on me, she went on holiday for 2 weeks after she'd done the operation. So she came in to see how I was. And that was my brother who actually asked and said, is he ever going to walk again? And she said, no. As soon as she said it, my stomach went. I was like, whoa, that is true. And it's weird how you accept the worst, but you then hope for the best type thing. I went on a bit of a journey of just, let's just see what we can do. For me, though, when you said about, and this is called from a different point of view, where you said your identity of you thought your friends wouldn't see you as a man, or like where you'd be that big of feeling like that. For me, that was the biggest thing to deal with myself. Like my whole life, I've been brought up to be, like I say, a man's man. Like my physical ability was what kind of was me. I could believe I could do anything. I was confident. So my whole image was based around my physical self, really. And all of a sudden that had just been taken away. I used to just say to myself, I feel like a wounded lion. I'm this person, but I've just lost what made me. And you have to then realize that you reinvent yourself, and which I did. And this is where the podcast and the Instagram kind of took off really well, and I documented it. And I didn't do that on purpose at the time. That was just naturally happened. But now I look back, that was me reinventing myself. I came to this point of still being not an alpha male, but a powerful kind of person, but from a point of positivity and influence. So I can still feel that I'm important, but from a completely different aspect. And that was my biggest kind of internal challenge, the way I see myself. Because you go, I remember going back to hospital, like days, like I can remember the first sort of day I was really laid by myself in the hospital, and I had the curtains around me. And I'm not a negative person, but I laid there and just thought stupid things like, wow, like how am I ever going to save the kids if the house set on fire? Or how am I going to protect? Like, I felt like a protector all the time. It was just, that was my job role. I was a dad. I was a young dad. And then I thought, I'm never going to get to walk my daughter down the aisle. And I sobbed my eyes out. I never cried as an adult. And then I thought, you can't worry about this stuff because you don't even know what's going to happen. And that was just the way I see myself was my biggest internal kind of battle. So yeah, I can relate with you feeling like less of a man because of it, but you're not. It's like strength is one thing, strength is another thing.
Yeah, it's what you've said there, like, echoes with me as well, in terms of when I got my diagnosis, a long time I questioned my identity. Who am I? What does this make me now? But there was that, you mentioned, like, the moment where you say you've got to get on with it. And it took me a long time to get to that point, real low lows. But that change in my mindset to the fact of actually I'm in more control than I perceive myself to be, and actually making those lifestyle changes that could positively affect my health and hopefully my fertility and stuff like that. Me and Sean have talked about this recently, like the importance of a positive mindset is so underrated, I believe. Literally, like, within a day, my world changed when I sat there and I was like, I've got to do something about this myself because no one else is going to do it for me.
That's right.
And what you've just said there just takes me back to that moment. It is understanding that you're in more control than you think you are. In any situation that's thrown at you, take time to process it. Life can beat you down. Like, it can be rough, as I'm sure we can
all... Life constantly tries to beat you down. If there's one thing, it's another thing. Like, I think the key to a happy life is being able to adjust your sails as such. You have to pivot, because if it's not one thing, it's another thing. You go through breakups, you lose jobs. Like, life is a constant need to just adjust. But it's when you don't adjust, you get the problem, you're stuck there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But it's just, it's refreshing to hear, like, your situation is completely different to mine.
I'm going to, sorry to interrupt, but like, from a fertility point of view, like, most people who are paralyzed end up being fertile, because it affects everything from below your waist. So there was a time in hospital, like, I didn't know whether I'd ever be able to wee myself. I didn't know whether I'd ever be able to poo myself. I didn't know whether dick was going to work. Like, you didn't know. Like, I was totally paralyzed. And I'm lucky, I catheterized for about a year and a half, but then my bladder came back, so I can actually wee normal. But in terms of, like, ejaculation and stuff, like, I can remember my first night back out of, like, hospital. I checked myself out, was with my girlfriend. And I was like, I've been getting, like, sporadic. Is it going to work? I don't know. And they do tell you, like, this is probably not a chance. You're never going to have kids again. And we checked into a hospital, like, into a hotel, and luckily I could get it to work and we could do it, but I couldn't finish. And I didn't come for maybe 3.5 years, like, if not a little bit longer. Like, I could have sex, I could have sex for ages, but I just couldn't finish.
Yeah.
And it was sometimes not nice, because I just felt like she felt I was a bit of a less of a man for not being able to do it. So I totally understand that feeling. And it wasn't until I went to my first athletics competition. And I got talking to some lads there in a wheelchair, and it just come up, and I said, oh, it's annoying. But some of them can't even have sex. Like, some of them have to have mechanical, like, penises installed, and there's loads of different contraptions for it. And it just come up as a topic. And I said, it's annoying sometimes that I can't finish. I feel like I'm going to finish, and you get that same thing, but I just don't get that final bit. It's like, she doesn't like it type thing. And one of them said, oh, have you tried this? It was called a Vibrect or something. It's like a male kind of penis massager. It was like a set of hair straighteners with vibrating pads on. And I said, nah, like, never seen it. And he was like, oh, I haven't come for ages to use this, done it in seconds. And I was like, I'm ordering one. And got it from the States, cost me about £400. And I kid you not, from the first time I put that on there, seconds, I was like, wow. There we go. And it was crazy after 3.5 years. But I used that for a while, and then all of a sudden it started doing its thing. But I totally understand the infertile bit,
It sounded like you had to retrain your body. God, that must be, because they said that to you, the double whammy, if you're never going to walk again and you're likely to never be able to have children again.
So yeah.
That is, it's bam, life-changing news. Bam, life-changing news.
Yeah. To me, the infertile bit wasn't as important for me, because I had 2 children. I could imagine how that would be if I had no children. And I've spoke to many 18, 19-year-old lads who are paralyzed, and they get that information. It's tough. It's very tough. But yeah, I was very fortunate. I had 2 kids. And they did tell me, though, there's ways, like, they can extract it. Even though you've got it there, they can cut your testicles apart, how they do it. So IVF. So there's obviously means and ways from it, from me being paralyzed at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had my balls cut open. I could say, yeah, the £400 machine from America sounds a lot more appealing. You mentioned there, you speak to young guys. And I remember that was something I think that was really inspired me to think I need to help others. Because I remember you used to talk to guys that it's just happened to. So when you are talking to someone who's facing a new reality, and I think this does apply across the board, whether it is an injury or fertility related stuff on the other side of an injury, but what kind of advice do you give in that situation when it is? There's no underplaying it. Like, you're speaking to someone who's got a life-changing situation.
Really have to assess how they're taking it, really. Like, I've met kids who take it really well, and I've met kids who struggle to accept it. But as well, the key message to them is always that there is still a life after these injuries. Just because you don't feel you can do something now, like you can. You can pretty much do anything. Sometimes things are going to be a lot harder, and life is a struggle. There's still a life to live. And I just always try to push that acceptance. Just look, you can't keep saying, but I used to do this and I used to do that. You have to accept your life is going to be different. And some of them, you've got incomplete spinal cord injuries. I'm like, look, you will get something back. Try your hardest to get this. And then some who have complete spinal cord injuries with no hope at all. I'm like, you have to just accept this is where you are. And anything's possible. It's tough. It's a hard thing. I was 32 and I dealt with it because I thought I had 32 years of doing absolutely anything I wanted. Like, I've lived a life. I'm extremely happy. I've done anything I wanted, really, where someone who's 16, 17, 18, like, they've not had a life. It's tough. And like you say, everyone's story is slightly different. But I'm yet to find anyone who hasn't dealt with it. Some of them deal with it in a month. Some of them deal with it in 2 years. When you look back, you see them actually going out and doing things with their friends. You think they do accept it. Just everyone takes a little bit of time.
Again, just a great life lesson. We're not racing against anyone else other than ourselves, and just take it at your own pace and don't force it, I think, is a really important thing. It's,
yeah,
like I mentioned, like Henry's book and then listening to you, that those things found me when I needed it, when I was ready. I could have picked that book up a year before and discarded it, going, I'm never going to accept this or whatever. But
yeah,
it was when I was obviously, and like you said, when you're looking for something, you find it.
Yeah.
And I obviously was. I can't remember what made me like listen to that book, but then that started everything. Like I said, then I went down that journey of rediscovery, really, and of personal development. And it was like leaving breadcrumbs as to how other people deal with stuff and taking bits that were good from them and applying it to myself. And that's the key thing here, is that what we try and do here on the pod is give people a toolbox. And it's not every tool is going to be relevant for that moment, but you've got it there. And at one point you can take it out and use it. And
it clicks. Exactly. I'm actually Friday, they say God's time is never late, don't they? That's what I was going to say to you there. But on Friday, I'm going with a young lad, a friend of mine's son, he's 12. And he's just got over cancer. And he's going on Friday to ring the bell to say he's cancer-free. I chat to his dad today, and this religious kind of, is there a God, got me questioning all this, was due to him. A couple of things happened, and I just thought, there's definitely someone listening. And when I first went and see Jake, the innocence of it, like, he's 12 years old, he was so happy and just took it on the chin, but he didn't understand it. It was just an innocence to it. And when I look at strength, and I think that little boy at 12 years old, he had to go to school, he'd lost all his hair, and he's been so poorly. That's like true strength. The innocence of it just shows that if you don't let it consume you and over pay much thought to it, anything's possible. And there was a stage, his dad probably went months or took there, she at the 12 years old, they had to sit him down and say, you're never going to have children. I think he is now classed as infertile because he had to have 2 rounds of chemo. Now, how does a 12-year-old boy deal with that? And you just think it's a crazy what people have to go through, even for his parents. And yeah, it's a proud moment to go watch him Friday.
What absolute hero. And you mentioned the word strength in his case, like the kind of the mind side of things, mindset. You've gone on to do some incredible physical feats that, quite frankly, most able-bodied people would struggle to do. Tell us about some of those. And this is not like, and let's not forget, you were told you wouldn't walk. So let's come on to some of the other things that you've done now.
I think the most recent one, which kind of got a bit of traction, was I'd done the Red Bull 400, which is, so in the winter, you have the big downhill ski slopes where they jump off. But in the summer, there's obviously no snow. So the Red Bull do races up them. It's like a 400-meter race up a ski slope. And they asked me to be the first lad with a spinal cord injury to do that. And I think it took me an hour to do it in the end. It was pretty tough. But like all these sort of crazy, stupid challenges I put myself through, I don't like to train for them. I'll try to explain it. I don't know if everyone gets it, but I always have that voice, which is, oh, you need to stop. You're hurting yourself, or you can't do this. And I just think your body's main goal is to always protect yourself. So when your brain is telling you that, just wants you to stop from a point of protection, then I get that little voice is, nah, it's lying to you. Don't listen to it. Don't. The longer I have that battle for, the bigger the reward at the end. Red Bull have the most amazing charity called Wings for Life. It's 100% backed by Red Bull, so all donations go into spinal research, and their sole purpose is to solve the problem. It's such a cool brand to be part of, and yeah, they get you to do some cool things, actually.
Wow. So, yeah, yeah, and Jude did that with you as well, didn't you?
He's done most things with me, really, like from a kid. I come out of hospital on the Friday, still very broken, and me and Jude done a park run on the Saturday. And it took me about an hour and a half, and I was so sore for about a week after, because the most I'd pushed was about 5 meters, and we came out and done this park run just for me to prove dad was still dad. But that broke me. Yeah, he's done it all with me, really. He's a good lad. And now he's 6'4", about 10 kilos. He's massive.
Good lad.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of you going up together, and it's just incredible. That park run in your chair, that wasn't the only thing you did not long after, was it?
No, done the Berlin Marathons as well. We've done that for charity. And yet again, I didn't train for that. I got my best friend Josh to do it with me in a wheelchair as well, because he's got quite a big social media following. So I was like, if I can get him involved, we'll raise more money. And he trained like hell. Like, he lived in a wheelchair for 6 weeks, was training with David Weir and in the gym, like, trained like a beast. And I was kayaking and doing all sorts of what was not related to pushing in a wheelchair. And we got about 5 miles into that, and I was like, mate, this is tough. And that was another moment where I was like, definitely should have trained a bit for this.
One of our other podcast guests is doing 39 marathons in 39 consecutive weeks in 39 different counties in the UK to raise awareness for miscarriage. Yeah, we've both agreed to take part in the counties where we live.
Yeah.
And just before we came on, actually, my missus said to me, do you want to do a High Rocks? Is it High Rocks? I was like, that's my first, and it is what comes back to what you said, Tano, the first voice, the comfort voice. And I literally went, not really. Why do you ask?
Yes, right.
She said, oh, you can do it. You do it as a team, and you can do it as mixed. And I was like, tell me more about it. And what do you do?
Yeah.
I just said, do you know what? Let's do it. Let's go for it.
Yeah. I think the reward at the end is always best, isn't it? And the harder something is, and the more you don't want to do it, the higher that buzz is at the end. And that's what you live for, really.
There's a lot to be said to do at least one hard thing a day, something that pushes you out of your comfort zone. I don't want to get in an ice bath every day, but I like to do it 2 or 3 times a week. But then I like to run. Oh, I'm running now again. And then I like to go to the gym. So it's at least one thing a day. Because I found, obviously, when I did things like ice baths, like, I'd stand looking over it thinking, oh, fuck, I've got to get in this again.
That's the proper mental challenge.
What I found was that if I do it only 3 times a week, I'm like, you're in this for 5 minutes, you do it 3 times a week, just get in. And I just find it easier. So I just break up what's hard over the week.
Yes, right.
But each day I do something that pushes me in some way. And yeah, it's good for your mental health, good for your self-esteem, your confidence.
Those little 0.1% every day, every year, that's like 36%. That's a bit of maths for me. Maths was never my strong point. So, Ben, this has been incredible. This is everything that I knew it would be. And I'm so grateful, because I know someone will make a change as a result of this. And it's an absolute honour to have you on to share your incredible story. So thank you.
Like I said, that ripple effect. It's just like anything you do on a daily basis and interact with people, it ripples, and you don't know where it ripples, and you don't know how it affects people. Just even if from my accident, this was the only thing to stem from it, then that's a great thing. And the same from you boys. You've done this podcast, and I'm sure you get messages and you help a number of people, and then they might stem to go on. And it just, you never know actually what good it does. So keep up the good work.
Oh yeah. Thank you for causing those ripples, because like you said, they're going further out than you could ever know, even when you think that they've slowed down into the distance, they're still going. And that's out there forever. This story is going to change people's lives for a long time to come.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.